broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for March 28th in the year of our Lord 2020. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America, as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen. A quick recap of yesterday's show. We had our guest on, Sheriff Richard Mack, with us, CSPOA.org, for 2 hours. Sam Curtin, the good sheriff, broke down a lot of updated news for you for 2 hours. It's still available at LibertyRoundtable.com. Spread the word. LovingLiberty.net as well. We talked about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Prophet, seer, and revelator, or president of the church, his name is Russell M. Nelson. He invites all to join in fast and prayer for relief in the COVID-19 outbreak. Quote, save the date, global day and fasting of prayer might March 29th, that's tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, day of fasting and prayer, save the date. Religious leaders across the globe are pushing for this, talking about this. I wish the president would talk about it at the same time, although I got to give President Donald J. Trump a little bit of a kudos. He did call for a day of prayer a couple of weeks ago. We need to unite our efforts and really work on this, folks. I believe there's power in prayer. Ben Franklin said, and if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire could rise without his aid? Now, I don't know about an empire, a nation for sure. And no doubt we'd become a big player on the world's stage. Let's make sure we use our leadership as a light on a hill constitutionally as a Christian nation. Roy Moore says not to give in to fear. Amen to that reality check. We also asked the question, how long will it take for the coronavirus to run its course? We're going to get into that as the broadcast unfolds today, folks, because I think that's a really fair, critical question. How long will the coronavirus take to run its course? We also talked about Crocs, the company, donating shoes to health workers. They're donating 10,000 Crocs a day. That's phenomenal. Good private sector work, folks. I love it. We also talked about one of those evil billionaires that Bernie Sanders hates just put in millions to help healthcare workers by their own free will and choice. We talked about Harvard study finds the COVID-19 fatality rate far lower than it used to think. I kid you not. Second hour, we talked about a man who left a $10,000 tip to help restaurant workers deal with the coronavirus downturn. Epidemiologists behind the, quote, highly cited coronavirus model now are admitting they've got a downgrade projection. Here's what they basically said. They said, listen, the number of cases is way more than we thought it was. You heard me. The number of cases way more than we thought it was. They're saying half of Europe is infected already. They're also saying that, you know what? They thought this thing came out in January. Now they're admitting it came out well over a month. They say a month earlier at the least. So not only are the number of cases way underestimated, but they say it came out well over a month earlier than they thought it did. And then they say the number of deaths they projected, way too high. It's not even close. So the professor, Gupta in this case, led a team of researchers at an Oxford modeling study that suggests that it's been suggesting for over a month earlier. Wow, that is huge. Huge news, but it's nothing different than we've been telling you all along. We've been right. They finally admitted somewhat of the truth now. Nonprofits donates iPads to connect nursing home residents with loved ones so it's not so much isolation. That's phenomenal news. CEO of Texas Roadhouse doubles down and gives his salary and his bonus to his workers. Jerry Falwell invites thousands of Liberty students back to campus. He says, I think we, in a way, are protecting students this way. Wow, I agree with Falwell. The church, another church out there, says it has a constitutional right to open, defying a state health order. Another pastor defies coronavirus laws, or quote, orders, holds service for 1,800 people and says, hey, the Holy Ghost is there. We need to meet together and fast and pray. As the Bible says, meet and worship the Lord. Americans, they say, could see checks within 3 weeks. USA Today. Americans are divided on Donald Trump's response to the coronavirus. And that's really a recap of what we talked about. But how long will the coronavirus last, some are saying? Dr. Anthony Fauci saying, hey, this thing's going to be seasonal. So the problem is, when you say how long will this last, it's a little bit of a clown question. Because if it comes back over and over and over and over, then it could last, what, forever? And get more hardcore when it continues? In other words, mutate and get stronger and stronger? Let's talk about it all, shall we? All right, our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is a man named Tim Starks. And he has spent the last 20 years working as an analyst in cybersecurity and risk analysis, not to mention business disaster planning and recovery. Mr. Starks, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Thank you, Sam. As always, it's a pleasure to join you.
All right. I know that was a little bit of a long summary, but it leads up to a lot of the discussion we want to have today. I want to talk about the economy some. I want to talk about the lockdowns some. There's a lot to discuss, but it has to do with, first off, how long will the coronavirus, you know, take its course? How long is this going to be? People are saying it's, well, Donald's hoping it might, you know, we might not really have to deal with it after Easter. Some are saying that's way too aggressive. That's not right. Some are saying, don't worry, it's not as bad as they say it is. Some are saying, worry, it's worse than they say it is. Some are saying, I mean, it goes around, and there's really no unity on what people, one, how severe people believe it to be, what measures we ought to take to deal with it, how long it'll be here. Some will say, you know what, now that spring's here, it's going to go away quickly, don't worry, but then it'll hit us hard next fall. What do you say, sir?
Well, Sam, as you know, I've worked a lot in the infrastructure industry in this country with banks and power generating facilities that supply our power grid. And one of the things I know for sure is that they classify the different threat levels now with this virus on a level one, a level two, or a level three. Right now, they're at a level two. At a level three, they'll probably lock down. They got plans to lock down for probably 30 days and lock everybody inside to maintain the continuity of our power grid. But at this point, we're at a level two, and they're on a level two until at least April 20th. We know that. So it could go up to level three during this period, but they have plans to stay at a level two until April 20th.
All right, now let's talk about these levels a little bit, because, you know, the levels are very technical. The technical manuals define these levels and stuff like that. It's kind of hard for the average American to understand, and let me explain what I mean. Those levels relate to these technicalities for professionals, but what we hear coming out of that is mayors and governors and, you know, trying city councils and everything, trying to use words that aren't threatening but accomplish their tasks. And what I mean by that is you hear all these words like martial law, and everybody freaks and thinks it's going to be a flat-out military hardcore shutdown. And then other people say, no, it's not martial law, not even close. This is a shelter-in-place. And some say it's a shelter-in-place directive. And then some say, no, it's a shelter-in-place order. And then other people say, no, this isn't even shelter-in-place. It doesn't go that far. This is not a shelter-in-place order. This is a stay-at-home recommendation. And then others say, well, it's a recommendation backed by fines and penalties if you don't comply. And what I mean by that is they're using all these terms that make it very hard to understand where we are, right?
Yeah, and I think the reason why you see a lot of that and just some discrepancies, now there are a lot of people who realize that, you know, we have a constitution and they're trying not to overstep that constitutional rights, but at the same time, they're trying to help people realize, look, you need to do this and it's for your own good. Now, whether this is going to be as bad as some people think it is or not, it's still something, if we want to keep it from spreading, that's what they're trying to get the public to understand. You know, and at this point, there's so many conflicting stories about what the real fatality of this thing is. I don't think it's going to be possible to know that fatality until it runs its course. You know, there's a,
well, and even when it runs its course, though, to me, most of the deaths relating to this, it's where people have underlying conditions. And so it's very hard for me to really say if somebody's got, you know, a lung disease or a problem, or somebody's a smoker, or somebody's got pneumonia, or somebody, you know, and then they get the coronavirus and then they die. I'm not confident that you can say it's a coronavirus death necessarily. It might be, it might not be, it might be a combination caused death. So I'm a little concerned about the statistics, even so.
Well, and one thing you got to keep in mind, though, Sam, is that, you know, just here where I live at, there was a lady who I believe was 30 years old who died, and they think that her underlying circumstance was that she was overweight. So if, you know, I don't know what the statistics is, but I would say that most of our country is overweight as an underlying statistic.
Well, and is that the cause, overweight? I don't think so. Is the coronavirus the cause? I don't know. I don't think so. Oftentimes when elderly people die too, they have a disease or a circumstance. They don't die from the disease. They die from complications thereof, et cetera, right? So I'm not trying to muddy the waters, but I am trying to get people to understand that I'm not so sure you could just use that for the skyrocketing death count for coronavirus. I'm not so sure that's an honest assessment necessarily.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of contributing factors I don't think we're going to know until they have time to study it more.
All right, hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest, Tim Starks, 20 years as an analyst working with cybersecurity, risk analysis, and business disaster planning and recovery. I'm telling you, incredible discussions coming up on your radio.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Starks is with me, 20 years as an analyst, talking about disaster planning and recovery and more. How long will the coronavirus issue last? Don't know. What the count and how severe it really will be, what the death count will be, don't know. But I want to give Utah as an example to make my point. I am convinced, Tim Starks, the government is cracking down way too hard. And I know they're trying to use all these different terms to not sound so tyrannical, but at the same time, they want to protect people. I get that difficult balance they're in, but I simply look at the Constitution for the United States as our guide, and I say, you know what? What they want to do is say they believe in the Constitution, but when an emergency comes, they want to set it aside for expediency purposes. And I believe the Constitution primarily is meant for when there's an emergency. The more there's an emergency, the more we need that separation of powers and checks and balances to make sure they don't, quote, overreach. And I'll give you an example in Utah of what's happening, because I think it's a case model for the nation that I understand the most, and so it'll kind of help me navigate this discussion a little bit. But here's the deal. In Utah, They say the third death has taken place. And again, the first two I know had underlying conditions. And so I don't really know that you can count all three deaths to corona, but they are. So three deaths so far in the state of Utah. There's 3.2 million people in the state and three deaths. And the state has 480 cases. So not even 500 cases. And only three have died so far. And they've probably done almost 10,000 tests to date. And I look at that and I say, you know what? I don't know what percent of death rate you want to use, whether it's compared to the population or compared to the number of people tested, you know, compared to the death rate, compared to, I don't know. But the number is extremely low. 3.2 million population. Maybe 10,000 tests at most. 480 cases only. And only three deaths. And so you look at that and you say, well, you know what? Utah's not hit that hard. I mean, I know 480 cases is a lot, but you know, we have a lot more of the flu than that and a lot more deaths every year from that by far, not even close to debatable. Well, Utah's directive now, as of last night, came from the governor, Governor Gary Herbert of Utah. And he says the directive, which is not a shelter in place order, was issued in response to the COVID-19 epidemic or pandemic, and it will remain in effect until April 13th. And they urge all Utahns to stay in their homes unless it's for essential purposes. You can go outside. You got to practice social distancing, but they're closing parks all over the state. They're literally saying, hey, this is a peaceful stay-at-home directive. It's not an order. There's no fines. There's no penalty statewide for this at all. It's a stay-at-home order, a directive, not a mandate, not martial law, not shelter in place. Please, guys, this is not a mandate. We really need you to do this. So the governor walking a very fine line here, and I have to give him a little bit of credit, Tim, because he's not mandating or fining or penalties of any kind, but he is really trying to make it as extreme as he can make it without crossing the line. And you know what? I'm not the biggest fan of Governor Herbert, but I think he does a lot right. And in this case, I think he's doing his best to honor the Constitution, but yet take this as seriously as everybody expects him to. Do you think that's a fair assessment, first of all?
I do, Sam. And I think the reason why you see a lot of inconsistencies in some of these orders is because there are some governors and mayors who realize we do have a Constitution and they're trying to abide by that Constitution, but yield the urgency to people to, you know, stay at home. You know, since Trump has tried to tell people, you know, it's not his job to do this. He wants the governors to do this like they should. You know, that the United States is there to offer assistance, but he doesn't want to implement, you know, a martial law and to make this a federal thing. He wants the states to do it on their own accord. But the thing that should have people worried is, you know, just like you talked about earlier, I mean, this is something that, why is this response this way? Is there more to this than we know? Is this thing been mutated with another virus that's going to come back and get us a second round harder that they're worried about? Is there another agenda to this? I don't know. But, you know, there's a strong response to this.
Yeah, and they're not sharing that information with us if they do know or they don't know either. But something has got them extremely panicked. And the question becomes, is it justifiable? And without transparency of information, I don't know the answer either. But here's what I do know. I believe President Trump has walked a very fine line, and I got to give him credit for not pushing too hard. Now, I know that a lot of people are criticizing him, saying he's not done enough, but I think he's walking a very fine line. And I think the governor of the state of Utah, Gary Herbert, is doing a very similar thing as Trump. I think they're on the same page. But let me tell you who I do think has crossed the line. So the state, there's no mandate. There's a real urge, a directive by the governor, stay home, people. You know what? We really need you to do this voluntarily. There's no order at this time. However, Salt Lake City Mayor, the guy's name is Aaron Mendel, or I guess, okay, maybe it's a lady here. Aaron Mendel gives, quote, force of law to stay-at-home directive. So you got a directive from the governor statewide that says, guys, please do this. We really need to take this seriously. I'm not going to mandate it, but I'm really telling you, we really got to do this. Please. And the mayor of Salt Lake City saying, I'm going to turn it into force of law for our city. That's Salt Lake City, not the rest of the state. If residents of Salt Lake City violate Governor Gary Herbert's new stay-at-home, stay-safe directive, then You could be charged with a Class B misdemeanor, fined up to $1,000, and get 6 months in jail. Menendez's proclamation making this punishable of a misdemeanor, $1,000, 6 months in jail. Okay, it goes into effect as of midnight last night. So it's already in effect. People literally got only a couple of hours to deal with this. I think that the mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah, has gone too far, sir.
Well, I would say that, you know, in my opinion, they probably have too. I mean, for no more outbreaks, no more cases that you have there, it seems a little extreme. And there again, I have to ask the question, what do they know that we don't know? Is there legitimacy behind this fear?
Well, and I don't know. Here's what the mayor says. And this will stay in effect as long as Salt Lake City is in a, quote, state of emergency. And so when you move us to a state of emergency, when you literally have congressmen and senators saying we are at wartime levels, when you have the federal government literally enacting laws that force the private sector to do the government's bidding to build products and services, which we'll get into in a minute, and then you literally have these mayors and some of these people taking it that far, penalties and fines and jail time, and this will be in effect who knows how long as we're in a state of emergency. Well, states of emergency sometimes never get removed, never get taken off. We're always just living under a state of an emergency. I'm just telling you, this has gone too far. I think the mayor needs to be removed over this. I'll go that far and say that. This is out of control. There's only 3 deaths so far. I don't know that we can blame all of them at all on the coronavirus. There's only 480 people in the whole state that have even got positive tests on this thing, 85% of which will basically not even need to go to the hospital for it. And so far, I don't see that this is the pandemic they're claiming. It might spread quickly. I get it. But so does the flu. So does the common cold. So does the chicken pox. And we don't melt down and lock everybody down and claim a state of emergency and literally threaten to throw people in jail for 6 months.
Well, and don't get me wrong on this. I'm not trying to defend nobody, but I can just say, Sam, that from my experience in the past and the meetings I've said in the past at high level, situations to where you're briefed on potential terrorist threats or potential, disasters that could happen. I've been in meetings where we've been briefed as an industry that had to protect those, had contingency plans to protect the services that were provided to the public. And there's a lot of times, many times that these meetings happen, things are put into place that the public is never aware of. You are given a lot of top secret information that's not to be disclosed with the public at that time as well. For there to be this much of an alliance between the both parties and so many different types of entities, I mean, we're talking religious, we're talking governments, cities, all the politicians, for this much alliance and then from so many different countries, there's got to be something really big here that we don't know at this point. Or, there's got to be something pushing this with an agenda and on a global basis, because there's many people on board with this.
And so I get the necessity, Tim, to protect the citizenry, to take this seriously. I get if there is information that may be classified or may be of such a sensitive nature that it can't be shared publicly, or it may tip the hand of an unforeseen enemy. I don't know all that because I'm not in the mix. I don't have all the intel. But I will say this, at some point, though, if you're like Governor Herbert and you really strongly recommend something and there's studies out that 90%+ of the people are doing what they've been asked, and you have an end date, I think you're, walking a fine line and being very careful and appropriate. When you're like the mayor, though, and you lock down and threaten to throw people in jail and there's no end date to your claim, with no evidence, no information shared with the people, at some point, you lose your moral high ground as a leader. Let's talk about it.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump has signed the $2.2 trillion coronavirus recovery bill.
I think we're going to have a tremendous rebound at the end of the year, toward the end of the year. I think we're going to have a rebound like we have never seen before. Even now, it wants to rebound. You can see it and feel it.
The measure provides hundreds of billions of dollars in direct payments to most people in the country. It increases unemployment benefits as well as loans and grants to businesses. There's also money for state and local governments, as well as the nation's weakening healthcare system. During a coronavirus briefing, the president criticized Washington State Governor Jay Inslee and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
I guess complaining would be a nice way of saying it. We're building hospitals. We've done a great job for the state of Washington. Michigan, all she does is she has no idea what's going on, and all she does is say, oh, it's the federal government's fault.
This is USA Radio News.
Maybe you can relate to this. A lot of people think they're stuck with their health plan. It costs too much, or for whatever reason, they just don't like it. But great news, you are not stuck with it. There is a choice. It's called MediShare, and you could save so much. The typical savings for a family is $500 a month. Major difference maker. This is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And just to give you a little more info about MediShare, it's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's worked beautifully for 26 years, has more than 400,000 members, and they've shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So yes, they could help share your needs too. So you're not stuck. There's an excellent alternative. Whether you're single or married, you got a family, MediShare is super flexible. You can choose an option that works for you and start saving lots of money. You can join anytime. They're great to talk to. No pressure. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden spoke during a CNN town hall meeting. He said, based on data he's gotten from medical experts, things will probably return to normal sometime in June. He said, though, that no one really knows for certain.
What we do know is that it's a false choice to make, saying that you either open the economy or everything goes to hell, or in fact you take care of the medical side. You cannot make this economy grow until you deal with the virus.
Currently, there are over 104,000 reported coronavirus cases in the country and nearly 2,000 deaths. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has become the first leader of a major country to test positive for the COVID-19 virus. There have been three new outbreaks appearing in the U.S. Deaths are now surging in Italy and also in Spain. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Starks is with me. He's got 20 years as an analyst working with cybersecurity, risk analysis, and business disaster planning and recovery. Not to mention, of course, the preparedness part that's key. We're talking about how long will the coronavirus last and how long will it take to run its course and how bad is this? And you know what? There might be intel we don't know. Our leaders are certainly acting draconian about this in many ways. But you know what? Some are trying to walk a fine line. President Trump and the governor of Utah, Gary Herbert, they're acting, in my opinion, very responsibly. They're saying, listen, we've got to be as hardcore on this as we can be because we need to stamp this out and stop this, you know, slow the spread. We got to do that because we can't handle it with the hospitals. We don't have enough medical equipment. There's legitimate reasons for this. They've explained some of that to us. But when I only see three deaths in the state of Utah with 3.2 million people and only 480 cases, I'm thinking, you know what? The common cold and the flu, you know what? Do this every year. Chicken pox does this. You know, we go on respiratory illnesses, do this all the time. Oh, I just got a respiratory illness. People say it. Okay. They don't lock it down this hard. Now, I appreciate President Trump and the governor not being so tyrannical. They're just pleading with people. They're giving directives and guidelines and best practice and really being patient. And I believe they're not crossing the line and violating the Constitution because they're not mandating. They're giving an end date to what they say. Listen, this ends on April 13th in Utah, according to the governor. President Trump saying, hey, we're really trying to get this solved by Easter and start to open things up. We're building a model to make that happen based on risk assessment. Okay, that's very clear explanations. I think the president and the governor in these two examples are on target. But when you lock down a city like Salt Lake City. I think this mayor, Aaron, whatever her name is out of control. Okay, locking down, $1,000 fines, 6 months in jail if you violate the directive by the governor. And then there's no end date. This is going to be the case as long as Salt Lake City is in a state of emergency, whatever the heck that means. I believe that's gone too far, and I believe the mayor should be removed over this. You just can't do that. And at some point, you say, well, you got to give the leaders, Sam, a little bit of leeway. Remember, you elected them. You can't just be armchair quarterback criticism of them. You know what? But at some point, you can say there's intel they can't share with us for the safety of the American people, or it's classified, or it's whatever. But at some point, there's got to be a fine line there, Tim. And I think this Utah is a perfect example of kind of where we are and where we cross the line. And at what point do we as the citizenry have the right to say, wait a minute, I know you can't share everything with us. I get that you're our leader. I get that we elected you, but you've gone too far. At what point can we be honorable citizens, but yet, you know what, justifiably make that claim and be right in this? That's kind of where the rub is. And I don't bring it up to be hateful of government. I am not anti-government. In fact, I'm highlighting this to make a very important point. And the reason I'm spending so much time on it is I don't think people understand it. They don't know how to feel. They want to support their leaders. They do want to be safe. They don't want to be out of line. They don't want their rights taken. And this balance, I don't think people know how to handle very well. And that's why I'm spending so much time on it. But I say this, my mayor has crossed the line without greater explanation. Somebody owes us an explanation somewhere when you give these harsh orders and there's no end date to them. At some point, as the executor of a given city, county, state, federal government, wherever, at some point, you lose the moral high ground because you're basically turning yourself into a dictator. Where's the legislative process? Where's the right of the people? Where's the, you just can't take rights away with no explanation and no end date, sir. You just can't do that.
Well, this brings up this whole situation, I think, is exposing a problem that I saw and came to light with me during Hurricane Katrina when I was down there and we were hired to go down there and take care of some situations. But, and that being is that mayors of cities have way too much power. The city municipalities and mayors can actually create laws that null and void the constitutional rights. And we're seeing that. We saw that in Hurricane Katrina, and we're seeing that towns throughout the country now. I mean, for instance, there's an Illinois town that tried to say, hey, you know what? You can't have your gun. You can't buy a gun. You can't do these things. And trying to stop the Second Amendment right in the name of coronavirus. So it's pretty scary when you think that a municipality can create its own rules and laws that totally disregard the Constitution.
Well, and even if they could do that, which I don't think they can, but even if they could, it would not be the mayor, the executive branch, if you will, that would do it. It would need to be some city council. It would need to be some, you know, city manager. It would need to be some district attorney. What I mean is there should be checks and balances at that level as well, and I'm not seeing it.
Well, there isn't. I mean, if you sit in some of these small towns or even some of these larger towns, usually the mayor and the city council and these people are all usually, they want to get something passed. It's not usually a problem. Every once in a while, quite often you'll see a couple people on the city board that don't agree with everybody, but usually there's a majority that kind of have their little clique that, you know, they kind of backdoor plan things and then they go into their meetings and pass what they want. But, I mean, it happens though. They enact, I don't know if you call them laws, but they enact city ordinances that become laws that are punishable that violate constitutional rights. It happens in a lot of cities across the country. I mean, there's places that, just have absurd things. I mean, there's still old ordinances and laws on the books that you look at that are just absurd as can be.
I agree, and that's kind of why I'm spending time on this, because I don't mean to down leaders. You know what? I know that they're in a very tough spot, and it's very easy to just armchair quarterback. We elect them, and then we want to criticize them all the time. And I get that right now they're doing their best. I understand all that, but I am telling you, when you create orders like that, threat of jail in Salt Lake City right now, and you have, say, we're in a state of emergency, and this will go on, well, we don't know when. We don't know when it'll end. It just might be for, now I know that mayor's not saying it's forever, but I'm saying, I don't believe you can create these open-ended edicts like that without any checks and balances. That's not what the state said. That's not what the governor says. That's not what the county said. And I'm saying it's going too far. And I spend so much time on that because I want people to understand At some point, we the people have got to push back and say, you know what? Enough is enough. Okay? You've got the president just signing into law yesterday a $2.2 trillion stimulus package. They call it the CARES Act. It's a stimulus package that just got signed into law, passed by the Senate, passed by the House, signed into place by President Donald Trump, where literally we basically turned into a socialist nation virtually overnight. And some would say the ends justify the means, but there's only one person, one single person that stood against it publicly, Thomas Massey of Kentucky. He voted down the measure, tweeting out saying, I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and I take that oath seriously. In other words, he's saying, I get that we have problems, but I don't think the answer is to violate the Constitution and basically spend us into oblivion. And Donald Trump literally criticized Thomas Massey big time. Now they're threatening repercussions because he's a member of the Republican Party. They're saying that he might need to be punished severely for his stance on this. It's getting out of control, sir.
Well, and you see this not just in the politics. You see this in our social media environment and setting. I mean, there's people that are just going totally nuts about people who have some supplies, more than 2 weeks worth of supplies, and trying to act like, I've heard comments that the police should go around to people's houses and they got more than 2 weeks, they should confiscate it and put them in jail. I mean, there's a dangerous level of intimidation factor in this country. If someone doesn't agree with you, that they're going to intimidate you into being like them or being the way they want you to be. And that's not how our country was founded. Our country was founded on representation of all people, not the mob rules democracy that, people think we need to have in this country.
All right. President Trump has done really well at not mandating shelter in place or martial law or whatever that sliding scale is. I don't know the difference between a stay-at-home directive and a stay-in-place shelter order, except for the only line that's crossed. It's basically the same thing, but one has the penalty penalties associated with it, mandated by government. The other one doesn't. So as far as I understand, the difference between a shelter in place bordering on it and a martial law, when you get martial law, you get the military enforcing it. When you get shelter in place, you get the normal civilian police and everything else mandating it with penalties. When you get the stay-at-home directive, it's where they don't want to go that far, but they really want the same behavior. They just don't want to mandate it, and they don't want to. Okay, I have respect for that. I understand that. That's the sliding scale that I'm kind of defining to try to explain it to people the best I can. Do you think that explanation is a fair one?
Yes, and I think that there's even some shelter in places. They have orders and they have laws, but they don't have any teeth to them. So, there's still a fine line there,
So, yeah. And that's why I don't care about the word shelter in place or stay at home and directive and order, because it all depends on how tyrannical or how force they get. Are they going to have military walking the streets and mandating it? Well, that starts to get martial law-ish. If they just have the normal civilian police, well, it's more than just a recommendation, but if there's not penalties, there's levels to this, and it's hard to define. But I want to talk about this in terms of what President Trump is doing, because I don't think they've crossed the line in forcing people to stay at home yet, except for in Salt Lake City and some places in California and such where they've gone too far. But President Trump has gone too far in one area. They're claiming it's wartime. And we'll talk about it.
Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes, in fact, my brother, he's 22 now, he told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
question. Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? I believe that great nations and great civilizations spring from a people who have a moral compass.
I don't think a civilization can long endure that does not have respect for all human life, born and not yet born.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
All right, so this is serious business, ladies and gentlemen. I believe Donald Trump is going too far in one area. So Donald Trump named Peter Navarro as the National Defense Production Act Policy Coordinator. So National Defense Production Act, allowing him to determine where and when you can use the force of the federal government to mandate that the private sector do their bidding. Really, it's a takeover of private companies and factories to do the bidding of the government. Peter Navarro says we are engaged in the most significant industrial mobilization since World War II. We have a wartime president fighting an invisible enemy, Navarro said. Wow. We have the full force of government coupled with the full power of the private sector to work on this for the American people. This is out of control. We don't have a wartime president, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't declared any wars here. At some point, I believe this presidential National Defense Production Act, they're going too far. This has been around since the 50s, and it's been used throughout the years. But President Trump pulling this out of his hat now and saying, hey, I'm going to force this to happen. And literally, Donald Trump now is forcing GM to make ventilators. Your response to this, Tim?
Well, I think we all remember Rahm Emanuel, I think it was, never let a good disaster go to waste. You have to wonder sometimes, you know, there are a lot of people who let their fear drive them to begging for draconian measures and socialist actions. And it's scary because people, when they fear something, they want, you know, the government to step in and do all this crazy stuff. And I think that, you know, there are some people, I believe, in government positions and different positions of certain corporations and stuff that like to see these things happen. So you just have to wonder maybe if there might be some more hype to this whole thing causing this extra fear so that there can be excuses to implement things. I mean, was it World War One or Two that brought income tax, you know, to pay for the war? And then, of course, we were left with it and they never took it away. So there's all kinds of measures that are implemented and extra rules. 9/11 brought the Patriot Act. It's still here, you know, and supposedly there's no threat from them because they've been eliminated, but we still have the Patriot Act.
But think about this. Donald Trump has literally ordered General Motors to make ventilators under the Defense Production Act. Have we gone too far in this country where literally what? We say 100,000 people have an illness. And we have, what, maybe 1,500 people dead so far, but the flu kills over 60,000, about, you know, anywhere 60, 80,000 a year. We never call it for that. And now we're literally taking the private sector, free enterprise, and forcing them under government edict to do what they want?
It doesn't make sense, Sam. You know, it's just like the Governor Cuomo from New York saying he needs all these ventilators and complaining because he hasn't got them, but the ones he has received are just sitting in storage. They're not even being used. You know, they are literally stockpiled. The and not being used because they don't need them, but yet he's screaming that he doesn't have enough. But the people are reacting, going, oh, my gosh, how come you guys aren't getting this to him? He needs these. But they people listen to words and talking heads and don't look at the facts. If you look at the facts and see that, hey, this is just a bunch of hype, you know, people would see through this stuff. So I think, you know, this whole thing with, you know, Trump wanting to have these corporations do this, for some reason, someone's talked him into declaring, you know, the state of emergency or these, you know, war acts, and so they can implement this.
But hold on. He's not even the right branch of government to do this. You would say, well, he can do it in an emergency. Look, we've already had this in place. We've known about this since January. At some point, the president, and this is my point about timelines, you know what? For an emergency, the president has a lot of power. I grant that. But at some point, his power ends when we say we've had time to respond to this according to the rule of law and according to checks and balances. We've known about this since January. It's March, for crying out loud. We're over 2 months into it. At some point, the president doesn't have the ability to say it's an emergency. I got to act immediately in good faith here. He violates the latitude of the law in his defense. What I mean by that is, as time goes on, we say you can't just say we're in a wartime. We're not. There's been no declaration of war. That's a constitutional, congressional responsibility here. You could say, well, Sam, it's still an emergency. No, it's not. Not 60-plus days later with no end in sight. It's not. Literally, you know, having this law on the books that allows the president just to trot it out and mandate that the private sector does all these things, you've gone too far. This is why I always say that it comes back to the checks and balances. When do you violate the spirit? Even if you may have the, quote, letter authority to do something, when do you violate the spirit of the intent here? At what point do you have latitude just to do? How much could the president, if you shut down most business because you say nobody can communicate, social distancing, you got these, quote, in shelter or whatever you want to call it, shelter in place, in home orders across the country, so you shut down 90% of the business and then you co-opt the other whatever percent of business into government mandated surface. What does America look like? And it looks like a war zone, sir.
I agree. This is something I don't agree with. I agree with you, but I don't agree with the actions that we should be declaring a state of emergency, war state.
And at some point, I want to honor our leaders and give them the benefit of the doubt, because we did elect them and we do believe in the rule of law. The checks and balances require that we say, hey, we can't just criticize them at every turn. And that's why for a long time, for the last several weeks and first couple of months of this, I had some opinions and stuff, but I didn't push very hard because I felt like, hold on, let this unfold. We got to get data. We got to understand it. You know what? We can't make too quick a judgment. We can't criticize them. No doubt they're being cautious. But at some point, we say we have enough data. And enough data says, yes, this thing's spreading like wildfire, no doubt about it. But at the same point, just because it's spreading, that doesn't mean that we have to lock down. There's not that many people, even dead around the world, when you think about it.
Well, and I would disagree with you on one thing, Sam, is we don't have enough data. I don't believe we have enough data.
Well, we don't have enough data for all the answers, but we have enough data to determine they're going too far, though.
Well, and from my assessment, and your assessment, looking from the outside, looking in, it appears they're going too far, yes. But if there's more data there or more...
Well, how many people in the United States have it, for example? 100,000?
Well, I'm not even talking about our current data of where the disease is, right, or the virus is right now. I'm talking about, for instance, let's just say that they've been briefed and said, hey, you know what, this is a biological virus, and what's going to happen is however many people it infects, it's going to reinfect them, and it's been crossed with a herpes virus, so it's never going to go away. It's going to reemerge, and you can't create a vaccination for it. Or it's like the AIDS virus, you know, it's you can never get rid of it. It's just going to keep reemerging, and every time it manifests itself, it's going to be worse each time it manifests itself until it eventually kills the person.
Then if you're going to lock me down and take away my rights to such an extent, because every day my rights get less every day, who knows what's going to happen next? Okay. This is worldwide. At some point you owe me some explanation of reality.
Well, and here's how that goes though, to some degree. And we've seen this. If they come out and just give this great despair of what this really is, the public goes crazy. I mean, things aren't even nuts yet, Sam, and people are already stealing things from people. They're going crazy. There was a guy in Missouri that wanted to blow up the hospitals because of the coronavirus, and he was arrested and shot and killed a couple of days ago. People start to go crazy when they start to become faced with something that's more than they can handle. So I understand why they don't want to do this, because maybe, and I'm just hypothetically putting.
No, and I think this is a fair discussion, and I'm not really disagreeing with you as much as I'm highlighting this for people to understand both sides, because I think that's where people start to relax a little bit and kind of say, okay, you know what? I get what you're saying. I get both sides. We want to educate people over time to understand this, right? And that's, to me, is what this discussion is about.
Exactly. And that's where there's kind of a fine line between, you know, from criticizing over overreaction and not knowing the facts. I try to say, you know what? This is my opinion based on what I know, because I don't want to have facts released and find out something 2 months from now that makes me look like my opinion didn't make sense, because my opinions are based on what I know and what I see. And I come to the realization that there's probably a lot I don't know right now, because things don't add up.
And I think there's no question about that. And I do believe that's why we got to give them a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. And that's why I've kind of said, hey, you can't just criticize your leaders the second you think you know something. They don't do what you want. Remember, we've elected them. There are checks and balances in the system. They do have authority. And we gave the president the right to use his authority. But it's not defined in modern times as we let him do whatever he wants. It's defined by the supreme law of the land. And when it comes to the governors and stuff like that, they're bound by certain state constitutional laws and federal constitutional laws. The mayors, I believe, are crossing the line and out of control. And if this mayor knows so much more about something, he's the mayor of a little town. I say little because Salt Lake City's little compared to many big towns in America. I know it's the biggest town in the state of Utah, the biggest city. I understand, but I'm just telling you, it's not very big compared to a lot of big cities. If that mayor knows so much more than the rest of us to make an edict like that, at some point it needs to be shared with the rest of us. You can't.
I agree with that. I think when you get to the point to where you start to enact orders and laws that have consequences, you know, such as jail time, then I think there needs to be an explanation to people.
But you also do it without the process either. That's my problem, is that the process would say, hey, we got to have a district attorney in on this, weighing the validity of the law. We've got to have some city council or whatever you want to call it, you know, county commission involved. At some point, you can't just do this. And this is the whole point of the Constitution and the checks and balances, where a single person, the mayor, did this without explanation. At some point, you go, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and I don't think it would involve, they probably got a city attorney, not the district attorney, that would probably consult with them, and then there would be a board.
And you're right. I'm just giving examples to make a point that, you know, when does the county step in and say, wait a minute, city, you only have such broad authority? Or when does, okay, this is what I mean. Where's the checks and balances that we're talking about? And where's somewhat of an explanation? And at some point, as a talk show host, I have the obligation to bring up these discussions and to discover where those lines are, and to do so in the most responsible educational manner possible. And that's why I'm pushing, but I'm not being too hardcore. I'm just saying at some point there needs to be answers, explanations, more people involved, processes followed. That's what I'm saying.
And Sam, that's what I like about you. You always bring up the ability for people to think for themselves and analyze things.
And I don't think everybody needs to agree with me. That isn't the point. The point is we all need to think through it, and I'm not like the, you know, single-handed think tank or anything. I have a lot of good ideas, a lot of good suggestions, a lot of, in my opinion, quite well-thought-out opinions, but that's all they are, is opinions. We need to think about this as the American people, and we need to debate and discuss and understand this. And you know what? Over time, we get more and more and more educated, and hopefully we learn the processes that really create the genius known as America, and we learn to use them in effective ways that protect the people from all enemies, foreign and domestic, whether they be viruses or people or whatever it be. The balances are the key. The processes are what make us separate from rogue governments everywhere. Hour one in the can. Tim Starks with me. Hour two coming up. God save the Republic of the United States of America.